Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
This episode of the Bears Talk Underground is brought to you by the Spotify Green Room, formerly known as the Locker Room app. Guys, Spotify Green Room is a live audio-only sports talk platform, free to download and use. Talk to me, other fans, athletes, and insiders in real time. It's perfect for watch parties, debates, post-game breakdowns, and reacting to breaking news. Share your own experiences on the app. Start or join ongoing conversations. Watch games together. React to the biggest news, rumors, and games. And of course, I host a weekly show every Wednesday night at 7 p.m. on the Spotify Green Room. The Bears Talk Underground presents Club 34/7. Be sure and join me. Come through and talk with me live. All you need to do is download the Spotify Green Room app free in the iOS or Android App Store. Create a profile, link to your Twitter, and join into the group. Follow me to be notified when my room goes live. And of course, every Wednesday night, 7 p.m. Central, 8 o'clock Eastern is when Club 34/7 hits the air. So be sure to join in on the fun, guys. You don't want to miss it. And be sure to follow me on the app so that you'll know anytime that I go live, because we'll be doing watch parties during the preseason. We'll be doing knee-jerk reactions during halftime, during the season, and things like that. Lots to do. This app opens up so many possibilities for interaction between me and you, my loyal audience. So be sure and download the Spotify Green Room app wherever you get your apps. What's up, guys? Back for another NFC West preview for one of our opponents. This time, the LA Rams, and Sosa K from Locked On Rams will be with us in just a moment to help preview the 2021 Rams, one of the more intriguing teams in a very intriguing division. You know, two teams went to the playoffs last year. The Arizona Cardinals nipping at our heels. We were back and forth with them in the final weeks of the season. Could have been the third playoff team. And then the fourth team that wasn't in the playoff discussion was the defending NFC champion from 2019, the San Francisco 49ers, that were just ravaged by injuries. So it's going to be intriguing to see what happens with that division and what could happen with the LA Rams with Matt Stafford and all of the talent that they have. Easily the best roster Matt Stafford has ever been a part of, or at least the most complete, that's for sure. But before we get to that, wanted to address something really quick. It's something that's been rumored before. I talked about it once on my Spotify Green Room show, and when it was just a rumor a few weeks ago, and now it's kind of been kicked into high gear because the Bears have officially made a bid on the Arlington Racetrack property, which could be a future site for a new stadium for our beloved Chicago Bears. And I just want to let you guys know where I'm at with that before we get to the show. For anyone who hasn't been able to join me on the Spotify Green Room yet, formerly known as the Locker Room app, I'm for it. I am 100% for the Bears going after this Arlington Heights property. I'm all for them building a brand new state-of-the-art facility and all that kind of stuff. Not only for them, but for the possibilities that it opens up for the area, for the city, not so much the city of Chicago, obviously, but just for the area and what it all, you know, leans towards. You know, it just, if the Bears have a state-of-the-art facility, you know, it might not be a frequent thing that happens because we're a cold weather site, but you guarantee at some point the first available opportunity, Chicago will host the Super Bowl. And I know a lot of you are saying, well, it wouldn't be in Chicago, be in Arlington Heights. Well, the game would be in Arlington Heights. But all of the festivities and stuff leading up to the Super Bowl, trust me, it would all be in Chicago. All of it would be in Chicago. Aside from like Media Row, which always takes place in the actual stadium itself, all of the festivities leading up to the Super Bowl would take place somewhere in Chicago. I guarantee it. and you would be, you know, as an old school wrestling fan, you know that WrestleMania would be back in Chicago because Vince McMahon only has WrestleMania in the giant big stadiums now, and the biggest one that we have to offer where everyone wouldn't freeze to death on a late March, early April weekend is Soldier Field, and can't have that. And the last time that WrestleMania was in Chicago, I was there actually for WrestleMania 22 at the old Rosemont Horizon, a.k.a. the Allstate Arena. So, you know, that would definitely bring that back. I'd imagine when their lease is up in Indianapolis, the Big Ten would bring the Big Ten Championship back to Chicago because that's where the Big Ten is based in Chicago. So guaranteed they'd bring the game, quote unquote, home. Not to mention the Bears or the stadium could host the Final Four. And any other possibility, I'm sure that all of a sudden the NCAA would magically create a new bowl game to be played in that stadium every single year. If not for the Big Ten Championship, it just opens up so many possibilities. Not to mention the fact that our beloved Chicago Bears, a charter franchise that started the league that we're all in love with, would have a facility worthy of them. Because the big thing about the renovation that I hated from the beginning for Soldier Field was that we lost about 6,000 or 7,000 seats when we made this conversion because they had to, because Soldier Field is a national landmark, they had to preserve the colonnades on the outside of the stadium. So they had to build the stadium within the colonnades. And it cost the Bears about 6,000 seats. Capacity was about 67,000 seats before the renovation. It is the lowest in the NFL right now at 61,500. One of the most loyal fan bases in all of sports, not the NFL, in all of sports, has the lowest capacity stadium in the NFL. That is pathetic. Not to mention the constant tug of war with the Parks Department, the Park District, about the turf, how they won't switch to field turf or anything like that because they just want to resod the field, which costs millions of unnecessary dollars but gives the Park District something to do a couple of times a year. I wouldn't be against a retractable dome so the Bears could still play in the elements but also be protected at the same time. I know that it would kind of eliminate something. And yeah, it sucks that they wouldn't be playing in Chicago at Soldier Field, but it's a necessary evil. They wouldn't be the only team in the league not playing in the city they claim to be from. You know, the New England Patriots, are a Boston-based team. They play in Foxborough, but not close to Boston. Santa Clara, the home for the 49ers, about 60 miles away from San Francisco. And let's not forget about the New York, New Jersey Giants and Jets, you know, playing, in a different state from the one that they claim to be home to. So it wouldn't be a unique situation. And that idiot Mayor Lightfoot has no idea what she's talking about when she says the NFL wouldn't allow it. Yes, they would. The NFL would be more than happy to help the Bears have a brand new state-of-the-art facility that Soldier Field will never be, unfortunately. They just won't be. It's not going to happen. As long as the Bears have to work within the colonnades and things like that, even the world's best renovations won't help them gain the necessary seats to be able to host a Super Bowl or put a dome over the top of Soldier Field or anything like that. It's going to have to be a neutral site. As far as one that isn't Soldier Field. So, you know, it's something that we as a fan base deserve. It's something that the organization deserves. A charter franchise like theirs should have one of the highest capacity stadiums in the league because they would fill it up. It's the Bears, for Christ's sake. Everybody's going to go. They're going to go. So whether you're a hardliner, you want them to stay in Chicago, they won't be the Chicago Bears if they play in Arlington Heights. Nonsense. Yes, they will. Okay, and Lightfoot's comment about the Bears should be working towards building a roster, beating the past Packers, and being relevant past October. Fuck you. All right, that's what I have to say to Mayor Lightfoot and that short-sighted bullshit that she had to say about our team the other day. So anyway, guys, now that I get to put the explicit tag on this episode, let's go ahead and bring in our good friend Sosa K, our new friend Sosa K, from the Locked on Rams podcast. This is the NFC West opponent preview episode of the Bears Talk Underground. So let's get to it. Hang up the telephone. I hear the dial tone ringing out loud. As we move along here with our NFC West opponent preview, we move on to our second place finisher in the LA Rams, and you know, had a 10-6 playoff season in that beautiful new stadium that stayed empty thanks to COVID, and made the playoff run, fell short in the divisional round against Green Bay. Unfortunately, we couldn't watch them beat the Packers. That was too bad. But here to help us out and previewing the Rams for 2021, a new friend from Locked On Rams, Sosa K. Sosa, how are you doing, man?
I'm doing good, my man. Thank you for having me.
You know, it's always fun to meet new fans, and when we do that, or new friends, I should say, and when we do that, we like to ask them the same brand new friend questions. Number one, where are you from? Number two, where are you now? And then number three, your favorite memory as a fan of the LA Rams.
Yeah, so this is a little bit unique here, probably very different compared to some of the other people you've had. I'm Croatian by nationality. I was born in Germany. I lived there for 6 years. Now currently, and ever since I came here, I've been in Hamilton, Ontario in Canada.
Okay.
And I know that's not related to the Rams whatsoever.
No.
In any degree, whether that was in Missouri or now in California. Been here since 2000, and probably my favorite memory as a Rams fan, you know, the easy one is the greatest show on turf win, but I feel like I was way too young and didn't really understand football too well at that point. I was probably about 6 or 7. So I would say the NFC championship game this past 2018 season, just a few years ago, maybe the Greg Zuerlein kick to send the Rams to the Super Bowl against the New Orleans Saints in overtime.
Not, you know, going to talk about the pass interference call that the referees blew or anything like that. Okay, just, yeah. I mean, and you know what? I never faulted the corner for that. Mm-hmm. I forget what his name was. But, you know, it's like because he was honest about it. And that's why I didn't have any beef whatsoever with what he did. It's like he made the play. He expected there to be pass interference. He was trying to save the touchdown, which is exactly what he did. He openly interfered, and the referees just blew the call. You know, he served it up for him on a silver platter. They didn't make the call. He's like, okay, I'm not going to flag myself. So, you know, they went out there. I made the play that was necessary to save the touchdown and everything. And the referees didn't make the call. Yeah, so it was really weird. But
you could see him looking around. Like, he looked at one ref, looked at the other one, and nobody threw a flag. And by the way, that was Nickell Robey-Coleman.
Okay.
And, you know, they missed some other flags in that game, so I don't fault the Rams like that. You know, the drive prior, Jared Goff got yanked by his face mask on a first and goal, or whatever it was, second and goal. It would have put the Rams on the 1 yard line and had a first and goal again, and they did ultimately have to settle for a field goal there, so they might have had 7 points instead of 3. But you know, that's just kind of the way the game goes, and it was unfortunate to see that, but at least the Saints still had a shot to win it, right? It wasn't like, you know, the flag didn't end the game essentially, so you know, it is here and there, but
yeah, they could have scored even after that play, and or they you know, they just, and they didn't. They had the ball in overtime and didn't get it done. You know, they had their chances. I mean, that would have definitely helped them a lot, but at the same time, they had other opportunities, like you said. It didn't end the game. So they had their chances. So, but like I said, I never faulted the corner, especially after the game, and they asked him the question, and he's like, I made the play I needed to save the touchdown. If it's not my fault, they didn't call the flag. So,
he had quite a memorable quote. I don't know how PG or, you know, if there's any uncensored here, but it was a pretty funny one. I'm going to reserve it. I don't know what kind of audience, you know, how far you go with the swearing, but it was a funny quote.
Nah, we'll save it for later. But yeah, so, I mean, that was a great game. I enjoyed that one. Interesting outcome. You know, of course, 2018 was a very bittersweet year. For Bear fans, year one for Nagy, 12-4. Year one for Khalil Mack, he's playing like a beast all season long, elevates the defense. Trubisky in year one of Nagy, but year two of his career, we see him struggle but progress throughout the season. He was a much better quarterback
after, you know, in that playoff game against the Eagles than he was week one against the Packers. You know, we think we're really on to something, and then the double doink happens and we lose, we go home early, that sends the Eagles to the next round and all that kind of stuff. Just wondering what could have been, because actually if we win that game, we go to LA and play the Rams in the divisional round instead of the Eagles going to New Orleans, because New Orleans was the number one seed that year. So yeah, the Bears would have played the Rams in LA the following week, and it would have been a rematch from the Sunday night game. That was a defensive battle that the Bears ultimately won, you know, in that game. So it was kind of their coming out party that year.
I remember Jared Goff throwing five interceptions against the Bears in like week 14 or whatever it was that season. And then I remember watching the double doink game as well. That, you know, that comeback by Trubisky and that offense was incredible. Yeah. I thought for sure you guys were going to go through, but obviously the double doinks.
God. I mean, and it's just, and if, you know, going into that thing, it's like, you know, worst case scenario is for this thing to come down to Cody Parkey. And that's exactly what happened. You know, that he was choking all year long. He had hit the goalpost, I think, six times throughout the season. And things like that. And, of course, that's what he does when the whole world is watching in that playoff game, man. It was unbelievable. So,
yeah.
But, and when I was previewing that game back in 2018, our friend Brad Motter was the one that came on the show to preview it at that time. And he and I both agreed that it was going to come down to which team made the fewest mistakes in that game. And it turned out to be absolutely correct, because – that was Mitch's first game back from a shoulder injury, and he was pressing like you wouldn't believe and threw three interceptions in the game. It's like, well, the good news was for the Bears, Goff threw four interceptions and was sacked for a safety. So that is, you know, five mistakes to three on that one. So that you know, that checked out. The Bears ended up winning a 15-6 offensive explosion of a football game, and you know, but it was not to be. There would be no rematch in the divisional round thanks to Cody Parkey. So anyway, on to other more recent times. And last year in 2020, an interesting season for everyone, you know, COVID, and you've got this beautiful brand new $5 billion stadium that you're playing football in. It still looks amazing, even though it's empty and everything. You start off the year against Dallas. We win that game on Sunday Night Football, which is funny because that's how you're starting the season again at home, but with the Bears this time. And then at the road for Philly to start off 2-0, lose the game to Buffalo, and that was one of the really first like crazy games of 2020. Was it Buffalo that got up big and the Rams came back, or was it the other way around? I don't remember.
No, you had it right. Buffalo was up by like three touchdowns, maybe even a little bit more, and then the Rams made a comeback at the end there.
Yeah, and there was that crazy play with Aaron Donald, where they thought he grabbed a face mask, or it looked like he did, and it was ended up being like a fumble recovery that he gets and things like that. That game was all over the place, but Buffalo comes out and like basically wins on like the last play to take the win there, and then you get the wins over the Giants and the Redskins, which really wasn't hard for anybody to do last year. But it was funny, 5 weeks into the season, you're 4-0 against the NFC East, just like that.
Yeah, they swept up the East. Luckily, they had them on the schedule, the East.
Yeah.
Kind of feels like, you know, that terrible division as of recently, and kind of doesn't really have any dominant team. But, yeah, the Rams did very well against the NFC East. Not so well against the NFC West. It was a little bit more 500-ish. But, yeah, the NFC East was good for the Rams last season.
Right. Speaking of which, after the 4-1 start, you lose to San Francisco. Come home for a Monday night game, which was an absolute disaster for the Bears. We couldn't get in. I mean, I give all the credit in the world to the Rams and their defense in that one. They were spectacular in that one. It was the Leonard Floyd revenge game in that one. And, you know, the Bears just couldn't get anything going. The Rams won that one 24-10 on Monday night. And then the loss to Miami, which was kind of a surprise when that did happen, but it was on the road in Miami. It was in November, so you had that sticky, disgusting Florida humidity that probably played a factor in that one. But the Dolphins come away with the win before the bye week. But going into the bye week, you've played, what, eight games, and you're, 5-3. You're in a good spot. and you know, you go 5-3 the rest of the way, but you had some really crazy losses, including the loss that cost the Jets Trevor Lawrence when they beat you guys like week 15 of the season. What happened in that game?
You know what? That was a weird, weird game. Now, it was kind of like a concoction of a lot of bad things. I remember the offense had pretty much scored one Cam Akers, like 10 or 12 yard touchdown that was called back on a penalty. He lost maybe another 60 or 70 yards rushing that would have gained them a few more points on holding penalties, things like that. Jared Goff throughout that stretch of the season, and dating back to that Miami game, was I think when it really, really started, was that seed was planted where I think the Rams really knew at that point in time, this is not our guy anymore. We're going to have to turn the page at some point. And it started in that Miami game. He had like three or four turnovers. And then it went really just throughout the rest of the season. Now, he didn't just perform terribly every single game, but there were a lot more of those three turnover performances or those 160 passing yard games where the Jets was another one of them. He just didn't play well. And, you know, ultimately they lost that game. I think they went in maybe a little bit too overconfident and didn't really expect this team to do well. And the Jets just kind of fought their way to a win. It was surprising. It was embarrassing for sure. But that's just kind of the way it goes. And, you know, like you said, it was unfortunate for them because they probably should have been happy to lose every game. But the Rams still, you know, they made the playoffs. They still got correct. But, yeah, definitely those Jets and Dolphins losses were, I think, very, very eye-opening for the front office and especially Sean McVay.
Did that loss to the Jets cost you the division because you finished 10-6 instead of 11-5 on that one?
I can't recall if that would have had the Rams at the top of the division because they did split with Seattle last year.
Right.
I believe it was 1-1. I don't know if the division records would have played in a different manner or not. I guess it didn't really matter because the Rams ended up going to play in Seattle anyways and won in
right.
the playoffs. But
yeah.
I'm not 100% sure. I can't recall.
Yeah, that was an interesting game, and that's kind of where the seed was planted for all the drama with Russell Wilson and the Seahawks throughout the offseason, was losing that game when at one point during the year they were the best team in football. Russell Wilson was going to be the MVP and all that kind of thing. And then the second half just didn't go their way. They still made the playoffs because they basically were top heavy with their schedule. They won most of their games in the first good chunk of the season and kind of fell apart towards the end of the year, culminating in a wild card loss to a division rival that they had just beaten a couple of weeks before. And that's where the thing with Wilson, he's telling these are the teams I like to go to. So of course all Bear fans were freaking out because we were on that list for some reason and everything. And then finally that didn't go through, and you know, the Bears found their way here in the offseason, and I'm sure you've heard plenty about that. But you know, the Rams were an interesting team. You know, Brandon Staley coming out, he was the, you know, first year as defensive coordinator for you guys, a resounding success, and so much, in fact, that he's still in Los Angeles, but now he's the head coach of the Chargers, so he's not your DC anymore. Who took over for him?
Yeah, so he passed on. He moved on after a year. Like you said, it was an incredible season for him. The Rams ranked pretty much number one in every important defensive metric. The guy was absolutely incredible. You got to give your hats off to him. He 100% deserves his opportunity. Coming in, Raheem Morris, the former defensive coordinator / interim head coach of the Falcons last year. And Morris has been in a lot of different stops over the course of his career. He's been in the NFL for a long time now. And I don't know, you know, if you guys recall, but you think back to 10, maybe 15 years ago, Raheem Morris was like the original Sean McVay. This was a guy who got a Tampa Bay Buccaneers head coaching job. I don't recall what age he was, maybe 34, 35. Like, he was young, and he was the original, you know, Mike Tomlin, Sean McVay, that young coach that's getting an opportunity that's probably a little bit too big for him. But, you know, since then, he's kind of bounced around a few different teams. And he and Sean McVay did spend time in Washington together. So I think that's where that friendship sort of started. They might have even been in Tampa together at some point. I can't recall. So they've known each other for a long time. But it is going to be Raheem Morris coming over.
You know who could recall? Sean McVay. Because the guy doesn't forget anything. Literally does not forget anything. I mean, it's just those recall games that they play with him in interviews, it's disgusting. I mean, people like to talk about me and compliment me on my memory because of the way that I can remember things, but I can't remember what the Bears did on 3rd and 10 on November 11th and week number 10 against this team with this formation and the ball was on this hash and all that kind of, he can break it all down for you like it just happened 5 seconds ago, and he'll regurgitate it right back to you. But he's talking about something that happened 7 months ago, and he can tell you a specific play, how much time was on the clock, and all that kind of stuff. It's impressive and disgusting all at the same time.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of what makes him so good at what he does.
Yeah.
You know, he's like, this attention to detail is unlike most players or coaches or people in general in life, I guess. And it's the little things I think that haunt him a lot that, you know, sometimes he maybe makes a bad call or whatever the case is, and then he just lets it, you know, sit in his head for a long time. And that's why I guess he's really good at his job.
So in the offseason, and you alluded to it when we were talking about Jared Goff there, you know, the Rams move on from Goff. They send him and 3 picks to Detroit for Matthew Stafford. And first of all, what is it with Les Snead? Is he allergic to first round picks or whatever? Because we're going to be electing a new president before you guys pick in the first round again.
Yeah, you know, the Rams are going to be going on 8 years, barring any changes, unless they trade someone for a first round pick. They're going to be going 8 years without a first round pick. So 2016 was their last one with Jared Goff. The next one is 2024. That's the longest drought since Washington had, I think, since like the 1970s when they went a whole decade without a first-round pick. That doesn't even seem possible in today's NFL with this salary cap and, you know, all these players making so much money. But the Rams make it work somehow. So I don't know what their deal is with this lack of first-round picks. They like going to get proven starters. And, you know, it's worked out well for them. They've had a lot of success, obviously, but at some point, you just think that it's going to catch up to them. But so far, you know, they've done very well with it.
Yeah, and that's the other impressive part. I was speaking with, I think it was with Q Myers from Locked On Raiders the other day. And we were talking about, I think it was Q. Pretty sure it was Q. No, it was Oscar Aparicio for the 49ers. For Better Rivals, the podcast that he does. And we're talking about how, you know, different teams have all these different approaches to roster building, and that, you know, the attitude for some people is the salary cap is only a problem if you let it be a problem or if you make it one or something like that. And my first thought was like, yeah, look at the Rams. I mean, they've got at least 5 guys, if not more, making $20 million a season, and somehow they can put a roster on the field. You know, it's like, I don't know how they do that, but, you know, especially in a year like this year where 5 guys making, you know, 20 plus million in such, that's 100 million of $198 million salary cap. And you got to put 48 other guys on a team with those five $20 million plus guys, and somehow Les Snead and company pull it off every year. And you guys, you know, not only do you put a team on the field, you put a good team on the field and win games and make playoff runs.
Yeah, you know, they've done a good job. Even with all this dead money that they've eaten over the last few years, they're paying like $30, $35 million per year to guys that aren't even on the roster. You look at Todd Gurley's contract, which was terrible. You look at Brandon Cooks getting paid a lot of money and getting treated out of the, you know, the system right away. Jared Goff now, a lot of dead money that they're leaving behind. So now they don't even have the full salary cap available to them. They don't have these early round picks, the first round picks in specific, but they still find a way to make it work, and they do it, you know, by fielding these upper echelon players that shoulder most of the weight, the Aaron Donalds, the Jalen Ramseys, the, I guess now, Matthew Staffords, Robert Woods, Cooper Kupp. And then they fill in the blanks, I guess, with, you know, mid-round guys that ultimately they do a good job of developing.
Right.
And they know how to work the salary cap too, like you mentioned. They do a lot of restructuring, things like that, kind of kicking the can down the road. At some point, you know, they're going to have to, I guess, just, you know, face the reality of probably being in a cap situation that's not going to be ideal. But so far, you know, it's been pretty good for the Rams, and they do have this Super Bowl window open, so I think they can justify kind of kicking that can down the road a little bit.
Sure, sure. I mean, I love the move for Stafford. I did find it curious that Stafford was all you – did you get a pick in return from the Lions? Or was it just Stafford?
No.
Yeah, I just thought it was just Stafford. And you gave up a third this year, and your next two ones, 2022, 2023, and Jared Goff. I was like, man. That is one lopsided deal. And, you know, it says a lot that that's what the Rams were willing to pay to get Stafford and how badly they wanted to move on from Jared Goff after the, you know, the rocky relationship, not so much that he's had, but just rocky in general. You know, he's kind of been up and down the last couple of years, especially, and, you know, to move on from him and bring in Stafford, who was an older player and things like that. But knowing that, you know, this is probably the guy that's going to help us bridge the gap from where we were to where we want to be.
Yeah, and, you know, there were just a lot of dynamics to it. It was definitely expensive, but I think when you look at it from, you know, the Lions' perspective, the Rams are a pretty good team. They're probably going to be picking, you know, in between the 25th to 32nd pick, especially now with Stafford. So you're kind of devaluing those first-round picks. They're maybe not as worth, you know, as the Jaguars' first-round picks are.
Sure.
So there's that issue. And then also now they got to eat Jared Goff's contract, so they know that they can sort of lessen the value there. He's being paid a pretty good amount of money for a guy that is, you know, on a shorter leash here. He does have, obviously, the connection with former assistant GM who was with the Rams, who is now the GM with the Lions, Brad Holmes. So there was a lot of a connection there. And then you end up seeing Michael Brockers going there to the Lions as well. So a lot of connections, and it was expensive for the Rams. But I think that they had to make the move. And, you know, their options were relatively slim. They weren't going to go get a rookie quarterback. They're ready to win now. And then you look at the stuff with Deshaun Watson, you can't really trade for him. They called the Texans for that. They called the Packers to check in on the Aaron Rodgers situation. So not many options. And ultimately, they seen a good guy in Matthew Stafford. And you guys are very familiar with him. You guys have played a lot over the last decade. And they made the move. So,
yeah, I'm looking forward to see how it's going to work out. Because, you know, the unfortunate thing about Detroit is that you see a lot of good football players go through there. You know, the Barry Sanders, the Calvin Johnsons, and the Matt Stafford, who has been a solid to, you know, great quarterback over the years, but he's just never had the team to support him, whether it's the, you know, those years where they made the playoffs and he's throwing for, you know, 4,000 to 5,000 yards and 40 touchdowns and 8 interceptions, but they have to score 50 points a game because they have the worst defense in the league, or it's all on him because they haven't had a running game since Barry Sanders retired 21 years ago, and things like that. For him to move to a team in LA where they have a lights out defense, they have a running game because that was one of the things that kind of powered your offense last year, and they have horses on the outside that he can throw the football to. So this is probably the most complete team that Stafford has ever been a part of. And I know that he's definitely looking forward to seeing how the other half lives instead of it all being on his shoulders. He coming in into a team where he's got help for a change.
Yeah, and I've said the same thing, you know. I can't remember the exact stat. I think it was either 8, 9, or 11 games over the course of his entire career with the Lions. He's only had either 8, 9, or 11 games with a 100-plus yard rusher.
Right.
That is like one per year. That is absolutely absurd. I don't even know how you could do that. That sounds harder to do than not to do. So that's not the case with the Rams. They have a good running game, like you said. They invested in Cam Akers. They invested in Darrell Henderson. They're going to have a lot of touches, those two guys together. They've historically been a very good running game under Sean McVay, one of the most productive in the NFL. You mentioned it. Good receivers, pretty good O-line, probably the best defense he's ever played with. Good tight end, good running game. And I think the biggest difference, the best head coach he's ever played for, the best
receiver,
play caller.
Yeah,
and I think it's going to make all the difference. But, you know, who's to say?
Yeah, I mean, that's going to be huge for him as well. Because he's also in his 12 years, actually.
12, yeah.
He's had a carousel of coaches coming through Detroit. I think he's played for 5 different head coaches, if not more. I mean, probably more if you throw in the interim head coach, just because the Lions organization not exactly shy about firing guys midseason and things like, hell, it just happened last year, as a matter of fact. But, you know, he's probably played for, you know, 6 or 7 coaches in his time in Detroit. And, you know, considering it's maybe a 10-11 year career that we're talking about, that's like a new coach every 2 years, kind of average type thing. And that's no way to have any kind of sustained success and things like that. You know, it's like they're, and the thing with Detroit is that they kind of do it backwards. They hang on to the guys they let go. They let go of the guys they should hang on to and things like that. It just, you know, it never really makes sense. There's not much of a rhyme or reason to what they've been doing in their coaching search. I mean, as a football fan, you hope they figure it out at some point, because it just gets boring watching the same team be crappy year in and year out, which is why I'm glad we're seeing teams like Cleveland and Buffalo turn it around, because it's, you know, watching them finish 4th every single year was just getting boring as a football fan, you know. But as a Bears fan, I'm happy to watch Detroit stink it up every year. You know, let them that's two guaranteed W's on my schedule when we play the Lions. So let them be the crap, you know, the crap heel of the NFC North. I'll take that every year. But as a football fan, it's like, dude, when are you guys going to figure it out? I mean, how hard is it? You see teams turning around all the time and you guys can't figure it out.
Yeah, I'm fascinated to see what's going to happen now. The new head coach, Dan Campbell, first time. Jared Goff in Detroit is, like, so weird to me. I can't even wrap my head around it. But, hey, man, I don't know what's going to happen. I do love the NFL for this reason, though. There's a lot of parity. I mean,
yeah.
Other than Tom Brady, of course, Tom Brady's the goat. He's going to represent the NFC or the AFC, wherever he's at, a lot in the, you know, Super Bowl. But other than Tom Brady, man, you see all kinds of different teams get to the Super Bowl or get good or get bad. You're talking about the Broncos, the Panthers, the Rams, the 49ers, all these teams that made it, you know, over the past decade, like, and they're not really ever a threat to go back the next year. The Eagles, too. And yeah. So I think that's what makes the NFL the best. You just really never know what's going to happen.
Right, and that's why I'm especially a fan of the NFC, because it is a gauntlet where there's a new team pretty much every single year. We haven't had a repeat NFC champion since the Seahawks 2013, 2014, and before then, it was years before it had happened like that. You just don't see it happen very often. You know, it's almost always a new team. And I did the math a couple years ago when Brady was still in New England, how since 2000, basically when Brady joined the NFL, the AFC has sent like four or five teams to the Super Bowl. And in those 20 years, the NFL or the NFC sent like 13 different teams. Yeah. To the Super Bowl. I mean, the Giants went twice, the Seahawks went twice, and, you know, but it was like after that, it was like Tampa Bay went this year, the Bears went this year it was Carolina, this year it was, you know, the 49ers and so on and so forth. It was rolling like that. There was pretty much always a new NFC champion playing either the Broncos, the Patriots, the Steelers, the Colts, or the Ravens. Like that was, yeah. Those were the five teams. Like that's it. It is such a top heavy conference, but in the NFC, you better have you know what together if you want to play on Super Sunday. So that's and what's, go ahead.
Now yeah. It's flipped. You got Brady in the NFC now. It's probably going to represent him a couple of times by the time he hangs it up. And
we'll
now
see.
The AFC, I mean, you got the Chiefs, but you got the Chiefs, the Bills, the Ravens. You got all these teams that could make it.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's some new teams, but it's still a very top-heavy conference. I mean, I'm anxious to see some other teams kind of emerge and make it a mystery as to who's coming out of the AFC as opposed to, you know, what was going on for years where it's either – where the worst New England did every year for like 10 years in a row was make it to the AFC championship game. That was the worst result that they had for a decade, was the losing or, you know, losing or making it to the AFC championship game. That was the worst that they did. And that's disgusting that you're playing for the right to go to the Super Bowl every single year. Sometimes you win, sometimes you don't, but you'll do no worse than playing in the conference championship game. So, all right,
fans, man,
absolutely. And so we're looking at free agency, and you guys were not players in the free agency market. Looking at the acquisitions, DeSean Jackson signing on to join the you guys is pretty much like the major free agent signing you guys made. You also re-signed Leonard Floyd because he was on a 1-year deal coming out to you guys. It was more in the subtractions. Michael Brockers, like you mentioned, headed off to Detroit. Austin Blythe is in Kansas City now. Troy Hill and Josh Johnson both went to the Browns. Malcolm Brown, the running back, is in Miami now. Gerald Everett, I think you guys are going to miss him, went to Seattle. And then Samson Ebukam, yeah. Headed off to San Francisco. And I know you're going to really miss Blake Bortles since he's backing up Jordan Love in Green Bay. So, but it's like it was more about the subtractions in free agency than the additions. Like you guys pretty much have your core intact and didn't really need to add too much to it.
Yeah, and they didn't really have a choice. You know, we talked about the salary cap a few minutes ago, and it hamstrung them in a bad
sure,
way.
Sure, yeah.
And obviously, you know, it was a little bit unanticipated with the COVID stuff. Nobody expected the salary cap to drop $30 million, which was unfortunate,
right?
Because teams they can't plan for that. So that was a big part of the reason why they lost a lot of players. I'm concerned mostly about, you know, John Johnson, Troy Hill, the secondary. They were the best secondary in football last year. A lot of the reason why the Rams were so successful. And I think they have good players, you know, coming up here that could replace them. But you're talking about a lot of leadership and the best positional group in the NFL. It's going to be hard to replicate that with two or three new moving pieces there. That'll be tough. You talked about, you know, Austin Blythe on the offensive line. There's going to be some shakeup there. Two, not necessarily new starters, but now you're sliding your right guard, Austin Corbett, to center. That's his new position. Never played at center in the NFL before. To replace him, you got a first-time starter in Bobby Evans at right guard. So two question marks there. They have a lot of questions. You know, there's a lot of questions for sure. Gerald Everett, like you mentioned, two players leaving the Rams and going to divisional rivals. That was kind of, you know, expected. We knew the Rams weren't going to be big players in free agency. The positive, you know, they still maintained a good roster, I think, and they find good ways to replenish throughout the draft. And not only that, but they have this tried and true method of trade these early picks, the first round picks, for proven players, you know, develop our players and then let them walk in free agency for the most part. And then when these players walk in free agency, collect those compensatory picks and replace them with those compensatory picks. And so the Rams are scheduled to get five next year, which is obviously going to help replenish that roster further. But definitely, like you mentioned, a lot of losses in free agency this past, you know, this past year.
Yeah. And it's, you know, it happens, you know, the roster management that we were talking about before, but the fact that you guys have the success that you've had over the last several years, especially since McVay came to town, speaks a lot to the job the coaches are doing, and also the job that the scouting department is doing as well, finding these players to help fill up these you know, these roster gaps, or finding you these depth guys that you need so much. Because, you know, when we go from Jalen Ramsey to the next guy, it's usually a pretty steep drop off. So we got to make sure that the guy that we have behind him is as good as we can absolutely find to help fill the gap when that all-pro player goes down, you know, God forbid.
Yeah, you know, they've done a really good job of developing these players. And I feel like that's one of the biggest advantages and bright spots in this organization is the communication between the coaching staff and the front office is really, really good. The coaching staff does a good job of letting the front office know the talents and the skill sets that they want and at which positions. And the front office do a very good job of finding those players and drafting them. And then, you know, the coaching staff now gets those players and has to develop them. And they've done a really good job of doing that. You know, they haven't had first round picks very often, but they still produce a lot of good players that, you know, a lot of these teams end up paying.
This episode of the Bears Talk Underground is brought to you by the Spotify Green Room, formerly known as the Locker Room app, guys. Spotify Green Room is a live audio-only sports talk platform, free to download and use. Talk to me, other fans, athletes, and insiders in real time. It's perfect for watch parties, debates, post-game breakdowns, and reacting to breaking news. Share your own experiences on the app. Start or join ongoing conversations. Watch games together. React to the biggest news, rumors, and games. And, of course, I host a weekly show every Wednesday night at 7 p.m. on the Spotify Green Room. The Bears Talk Underground presents Club 34/7. Be sure and join me. Come through and talk with me live. All you need to do is download the Spotify Green Room app free in the iOS or Android app store. Create a profile, link to your Twitter, and join into the group. Follow me to be notified when my room goes live. And, of course, every Wednesday night, 7 p.m. Central, 8 o'clock Eastern, is when Club 34/7 hits the air. So be sure to join in on the fun, guys. You don't want to miss it. And be sure to follow me on the app so that you'll know anytime that I go live, because we'll be doing watch parties during the preseason. We'll be doing knee-jerk reactions during halftime, during the season, and things like that. Lots to do. This app opens up so many possibilities for interaction between me and you, my loyal audience. So be sure and download the Spotify Green Room app wherever you get your apps. This episode of the Bears Talk Underground is brought to you by Kansas City Steaks. Kansas City Steak Company wants to make this your best grilling season ever. Visit KansasCitySteaks.com and get 15% off your order and free shipping with the code SD at checkout. From classic steak cuts to USDA prime to hard-to-find specialty cuts and more, Kansas City Steaks has everything you need to fire up the grill. These are steakhouse-quality steaks aged to perfection. They make it so easy. Each order is flash frozen and delivered directly. Satisfaction guaranteed or your money back. Enjoy their butter tender filet mignon, hearty Kansas City steak strip steaks, and savory ribeyes. It's been a hard year, so enjoy being together again by bringing the steakhouse to your house with Kansas City Steaks. Go to kansascitysteaks.com and get 15% off your order and free shipping with the code SD at checkout. That's kansascitysteaks.com, code SD.
Yeah, the when the Rams liked using their first round picks, they broke my heart 7 years ago. The 2014 draft,
Aaron Donald.
You know, here we are, and you know the Bears are picking at 14, and everything said that if Donald made it past the Giants at 11, or it was 11 or 12, one of the two, he'll be there for the Bears at 14. Sure enough, I think the Giants took Odell Beckham that year. So like, okay, well, that's definitely passing on Aaron Donald. Last hurdle cleared. Aaron Donald, here we come. And then at 13, one pick before us, the Rams, who already have three first-round picks on their defensive line, take Aaron Donald. It's like, oh, come on, man. Really? You don't need this guy. Come on. We need a middle of the guy. You know, we need that guy. We need him. You don't need him. You already have four guys, Robert Quinn, Michael Brock. You got all those guys. It's like, why are you taking him? You don't need him. And he turns out to be the best player in the league for like the last 6 or 7 years. So it's like, granted, we got Kyle Fuller, so he didn't exactly do too bad. But we didn't get the immediate return on investment that you guys got with Aaron Donald. Fuller kind of found himself in year three or four of his career. He finally, you know, got his head screwed on straight and started playing, you know, like a first round pick. But, you know, it's like if he could go back to do it again, I'm telling Phil Emery to trade up. Go get him. Don't wait for him to come to you at 14. He won't be there. So,
yeah. Look at the bright side. He could have been the Detroit Lions and taking Eric Ebron one pick before, which, you know, in hindsight, was not too good of a pick there.
Dude, you know, when they did the, I think it was a 30 for 30 or some kind of documentary on Matt Millen and how his own kid, like, punched him in the face on one draft day, like, literally punched him in the face. Because he let the scouting department or whoever, the owners or whatever, talk him into drafting Michael Williams, the wide receiver out of USC, who had been out of football the year before because he tried to pull the Maurice Claret thing and tried to go into the NFL early and ended up having to sit out for a year. And the person that every, like, he was settled on, he was going to take him, and then at the last second he let himself get talked out of picking DeMarcus Ware. I mean, as a Bear fan, thank you for being stupid, because that's all we needed was to have, you know, DeMarcus Ware in the division kicking our ass twice a year. But just like angry enough that his own son punched him in the face on draft day after they called that wide receivers thing. And he was a total bust for them. So it's like, yeah, you hear about moments like that. And I was like, that's what we're talking about as far as the Lions and not being able to figure out because they keep doing things like that. So
yeah, and that's what separates the good from the bad in the NFL, man. It's a game of inches, like they say. Yeah. One pick sometimes makes all the difference.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So speaking of picks, let's look at the draft. Obviously, no first round pick thanks to the Jalen Ramsey trade. So the Jaguars owned your pick this year. But you did, instead of like waiting until like pick 87 to make a pick, which I think you did like last year, the year before, you got a pick in the second round. Very interesting name, Tutu Atwell, wide receiver out of Louisville, was the first pick on the board for you guys.
Yeah, and this one was a head-scratcher for a lot of people, not myself. You know, I knew they were going to target one of those small, diminutive, speedy type of receivers at some point. Probably a little bit early for me, but you're talking about a coaching staff that prioritized getting more explosive all offseason. They talked about it so many times. And every move they made throughout the offseason rang true. You know, you go get Matthew Stafford, who throws the ball further down the field than pretty much any other quarterback in football. I think his average depth of target is only second to Jameis Winston over, you know, the past couple seasons. So that tells you how much he's going to push the ball downfield. You talk about drafting Tutu Atwell in the second round, a guy that has blazing speed. I think they're going to use him in that gadget-style role, a lot of jet sweeps, a lot of screens, a lot of that fun type of usage. And I'm sure he's going to, you know, get to learn behind DeSean Jackson as a deep threat who, coming out himself, was a lot of a, you know, smaller, lighter guy, which is kind of the knock on Atwell, the fact that he's 150 pounds and he's now going to have to go play in the NFL, which is kind of absurd. But kind of felt like a little bit of a luxury style pick, but I get it. The Rams said they wanted to get more explosive. They drafted Atwell. They paid DeSean Jackson. They drafted Jacob Harris in the fourth round, one of the freakiest athletes in this draft. And every move they made essentially followed that trend. So was a little bit of a luxury, but I think he's going to, you know, he's going to help that offense. Not so much maybe this season, maybe a handful of touches every game here or there, probably more of a decoy style of role, but it's very clear to me that they wanted to get more explosive. And, you know, DeSean Jackson, he's only got a one-year contract. When he walks next year or retires, it's going to be Tutu Atwell's role.
Yeah, and you know, it's always interesting. And the draft is that's what actually makes the draft fun, is that you kind of find out, you get to peek behind the curtain, because going into the draft, all the teams are so secretive with where they have people ranked, who they like, who they don't, and things like that. And every draft night, this is always a surprise as to where somebody values a certain player to be. Like, you know, you were saying, you know, you thought that 57 was early for Atwell, but apparently he was the highest player ranked on the board, because that's who the Rams went with when it was time for them to make their first choice. You saw, like, the Raiders, Alex Leatherwood, everyone thought he was a second round pick at best. The Raiders take him 17 overall. You know, he went ahead of, like, other offensive linemen, like the guy the Bears got in the second round, Tevin Jenkins, who was ranked across the board as a first round prospect. He falls to 39 before the Bears go and get him. It's just a matter of, you know, where they have this ranked, what they're prioritizing. You know, are they going best player available? Are they drafting for need? With, like, well, this guy ranks higher on this board, and, you know, that kind of thing. It's always interesting to see how teams factor those things out. And I would wager, if you put them side by side, nobody's board is the same.
Yeah, and that's what makes the draft fun. Like you said, you know, you have no idea what's going to happen. And even the media, you know, outlook, the mock drafts, the rankings, the big boards, all that, nobody had Atwell high. I mean, we were talking about a guy that a lot of people thought was going to be a fourth, fifth, sixth round pick. So right. It was quite a shocker when the Rams took him, you know, top 60. But, you know, like you said, that was their guy. And they felt like they weren't going to get him in the third round, which was kind of the talk there. And better to overdraft your guy if he's your guy than to, you know, hope that he falls for you. And then that Aaron Donald Chicago Bears situation happens and you don't get your guy. So
right. Well, you know, it's not a reach if the guy works out, you know, it's like, it would just be sour apples for somebody else to say it was a reach, but the guy was, you know, had a 10-year career and was one of our better contributors. So we didn't reach for anything. We got the guy that we wanted and he worked out for us. So it wasn't a reach. It's only a reach if it doesn't work out, you know?
Right.
So we got up next, we got Ernest Jones, a linebacker out of South Carolina. And, then we got Bobby Brown III from Texas A&M, a defensive tackle. Robert Rochelle, a corner out of Central Arkansas, before Jacob Harris, the one you mentioned before, the wide receiver out of UCF. It's like, who do you like out of that batch?
Yeah, so I think they all have unique roles, and I kind of understand all of them. Ernest Jones, I thought it was a little bit early. I didn't love his tape personally, but, you know, they love the neck up approach from him. Very, you know, smart guy, very good football IQ, very good at lining guys up and picking up, you know, trends on offense. I think that's kind of his role there. Going to be a run stuffing linebacker for the most part. And then the other ones I really like. Bobby Brown, I think, is going to be that Michael Brockers replacement. Really, really strong at the point of attack. He can two gap, and they love guys that can stop the run. So he's going to fit there. You look at Jacob Harris, who I mentioned. He's going to be a pure projection play going from receiver to tight end. But Matthew Stafford's always had a big guy that can kind of go, you know, climb the ladder, so to speak, and bring down some contested catches. So I think he can play that role. And you're talking about a guy that's, you know, 6'5", 240, and runs a 4.3. Like, this guy's an absolute freak. So he's worth that mid-round pick. And Robert Rochelle, probably my favorite pick of this draft, to be honest with you. If not the favorite, he's definitely up there. Very athletic corner, once again, like Harris. Absolute freak explosion. He was amongst, you know, the 99th percentile there among all corners in those explosion drills, you know, the vertical jump, the broad jump, those things, three cone. Had very good tape at Central Arkansas, former wide receiver. You see it the way that he attacks the football. And ultimately, they have some guys that are coming up on contracts here. Darius Williams is on a one-year contract. And I really, really love that pick of Rochelle there. Might not factor in this season. I don't know if he's going to be, you know, at his best in the nickel spot, which is where the Rams need somebody. If he's not a factor this year, I think for sure next year he could be a starter for the Rams there.
If that was Harris that you were talking about, 6'4", or 6'5", 240?
Yeah.
So how did he fall to 140 in the draft? Was it the lower competition from UCF? Was he a late bloomer who we didn't hear of until he was a senior and he had 80 catches type season? What caused him to fall as far as he did? Was he an injury guy?
No, I believe he started playing football late, like you kind of mentioned there. He used to be a soccer player. I think he just recently started playing football not too long ago. He's an older prospect. I want to see he's 23, maybe 24.
Okay.
And he just never really had much production at UCF. I think maybe, you know, his career high might have been 300, 400 yards in a season. So, and he was playing out of position. I mean, he's not going to be a receiver at the next level. He's going to be a tight end. Kind of like that Jared Cook style of tight end. He's not going to put his hand in the dirt and just maul guys, but that big slot, Jimmy Graham style receiver or tight end, I guess you could call him. And that's kind of, you know, why he fell. Now, purely a projection, it's been good, I guess, to hear recently that he's been doing very well at OTAs, which I'm not surprised. The guy can run, he can jump, and he can catch. But yeah, it's, you know, it might take him a year or two to sort of get his feet under him and understand the playbook and a new position.
All right. And then rounding out the picks, you got Ernest Brown IV from Northwestern. Defensive end, running back Jake Funk, love that name, from Maryland. And you got, let's see if you can help me out with this one, Ben Skowronek?
Skowronek, yeah.
Skowronek, oh, not too bad. Wide receiver out of Notre Dame, and Chris Garrett, linebacker from Concordia St. Paul, because there's that football factory of, you know, in the seventh round, pretty close to Mr. Relevant was 259, you got him at 252. These are all special teams guys aside from maybe Brown, correct?
Yeah, so that's basically exactly what you said. Brown probably going to be a five technique at this next level here. I like this tape, actually. I thought, you know, he's going to have a decent role here. The Rams lost another D tackle, Morgan Fox, in free agency. I think Fox is probably a better pass rusher than Brown, but I think Brown is pretty stout at the point of attack, like Bobby Brown, the fourth round pick. They want guys to fill specific roles, and Bobby Brown, Ernest Brown, I think those are both very, very good run defenders. Bobby Brown probably better at nose tackle. Ernest Brown probably better at five technique, like I mentioned, that Michael Brocker style of role. But at the same time, he can kick inside and, you know, offer a little bit of pass rush help there. But yeah, everyone else, like you mentioned, just special teams guys, late round character type of guys. And, you know, I ultimately, you can only do so much when you don't have a first-round pick. I think they came away with a pretty decent class for what they wanted. They always target guys that can fill specific roles for them on offense, defense, and ultimately they found those guys.
And, you know, the Rams, I mean, I know Fossil is no longer on the is no longer your special teams coordinator. I believe he's in Dallas now. But, you know, special teams is a very big part of what the Rams do. They have, like, one of the best kickers in the league. They have the best punter in Johnny Hecker and things like that. So special teams is a very important aspect, you know, and it's very important to McVay that they put the best possible special teams units on the field. They don't trade it, or he doesn't treat it like a, you know, like that throwaway down. Ah, it's a punt. Go ahead. Whoever we have that doesn't play real football, go out there and do something for a few seconds. You know, they want to put the actual best unit on the field that they can, and it's another thing that kind of speaks to their success. It was a big thing with Lovie Smith when he was the head coach of the Chicago Bears. I mean, we had starters playing special teams, like Charles Tillman was on the punt team and things like that. You look at like some of Devin Hester's highlights where he's running back kicks and who's blocking for him, but Charles Tillman, why is one of the best corners in the league playing the punt return team? Get him off the field. You're going to get him killed. How dare you? But that was Lovie and his emphasis on special teams, and Sean McVay does the same thing.
Yeah, shout out Peanut Tillman, man. Legend. But
absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. They, you know, they value special teams, and they should. It's a third of the game. Obviously not as important as, you know, offense and defense, but largely for the past decade, they've been, you know, a top three, top five, maybe the best special teams unit. Now, last year, they took a huge step back. Like you mentioned, Bones Fossil took off. He's in Dallas. Former kicker Greg Zuerlein took off. He's in Dallas with him. long snapper Jake McQuaid took off this offseason. He's joining them in Dallas. So it's kind of weird they're getting that Rams special teams unit over there. The only one remains is Johnny Hecker, like you mentioned. But that's why they got a new special teams coordinator for the second year in a row now. They got a new kicker. You know, they got a few new pieces. So I think they're trying to reinvest in that spot and just try to pick it up back to, you know, where it was before. Because last year, they were arguably, you know, one of the worst units in the NFL, in my opinion.
Wow. All right. So let's look ahead to the schedule as we wrap things up here. Sosa, it's, you know, we'll be talking again soon. It's, you know, we'll have you back on the show to preview week number one because it's Bears-Rams Sunday Night Football to kick it off. Looking forward to the game because I'm not sure who our starting quarterback is going to be. I mean, Matt Nagy is insistent that it's going to be Andy Dalton, but he's also keeps saying things like we're not going to keep him off the field just for the fun of it. If, you know, if Fields is ready to play, he's going to play. And, you know, which kind of like leaves the door open to like if Andy Dalton just has a total brain fart of a preseason and Justin Fields looks like the number one pick that we drafted him to be, he may be our day one starter against the Rams week number one.
Yeah, it's, I mean, that's the question of the offseason, right? For you guys especially, but even for Rams fans, who are we going to play in week one is what they're thinking. But I tend to think it is going to be Dalton. I just don't think he can toss Fields out there that quickly. And probably, you know, the right decision. That team is pretty good. I think you guys are a 10-11 win team. And you got to give Justin Fields as much time as you possibly can. The only reason I could see them rushing Fields out, and maybe not week one, maybe like week three or week four if Dalton really doesn't do well, is just because, you know, Matt Nagy and Ryan Pace, their seats are a little bit warm, you know, so they might have a little bit more intention on that quick return as opposed to thinking about it long term. But at the same time, you know, I like Justin Fields. I think he's a very good player. I wouldn't be shocked if he is the best quarterback week one. But it is definitely very, very interesting to see. And I know a lot of Rams fans are dying to find out who they're going to be playing week one.
Yeah, and it'll be a full stadium at SoFi week one, which I can't wait to see, man, to see football fans back in the stands. Like you look at, you know, replays or, you know, highlights and stuff like that of the 2020 season. And in those empty stadiums, it's depressing, you know, looking at it. It doesn't look real, you know, playing those games in the empty stadiums. Like I was watching highlights of the Bears Thursday night game against the Buccaneers last year, week five, we beat Tampa Bay at home. You know, over Tampa, it was that game where Brady forgot what down it was, thought it was third down, and it was fourth, and they an incomplete pass, and the game was over. Brady thinking he had one more shot and things like that. You know, it's just like the stadium was empty. It would have been going nuts if there were Bear fans in the stands in that game, and we beat Tom Brady and the Buccaneers and things like that. It would have been a total different vibe, other than a few claps and hoops and whistles from the sideline because we won the game. And I can't wait to see what that stadium is going to look like full on Sunday Night Football. So very interested to see what happens there.
Yeah, it's going to be great to finally get fans in there. I know the NFL wanted, you know, fans in there last year, obviously, with the Rams opening up on Sunday Night Football. It would have been awesome to see. But it feels like finally this year, you know, they're going to get that real grand opening for SoFi. And I just think back to that last year, that first game, Dallas on Sunday night. All the, you know, the images that they had prior to the game, you got Chris Collinsworth and Al Michaels and like all this grand presentation. But I feel like now finally you're going to get the fans. It's going to be fun. And as I know, you know, Chicago fans travel well. And I at that Coliseum, I want to say it was a game at the Coliseum. I might be wrong, but there was a lot of Chicago fans at one point in L.A. I can't recall what season now, but that's going to be fun. You know, I think both teams are going to be well represented, and it's going to be fun to finally see what that atmosphere is really like with fans in the stadium.
Yeah, this is actually our third year in a row traveling out to L.A., fourth year in a row that we're playing you guys. So we played 2018 in Chicago. 2014 was the same place. We were same place opponents because we both finished in first. That was in the Coliseum. 2020 last year on Monday Night Football, I think, was another same place game. And that's why we ended up playing each other last year. And then this year, because the NFC West is part of the rotation this year, year number four in a row that the Rams and the Bears are butting heads, third year in a row in LA. So then we move on from week one at the Indianapolis. So two pretty interesting games, actually three, because after Indianapolis, you come home for Tampa Bay, the defending world champions. So not exactly, not the most difficult start, but not an easy one by any stretch of the imagination. Chicago at home, Indy on the road, Tampa Bay at home. Those are winnable games. Even, you know, Tampa Bay didn't play well on the road last year, you know, and I'm pretty sure the Rams are pretty good at SoFi last year. So, you know, not the easiest stretch, but, you know, or not the hardest, but not the easiest one either.
Yeah, you know, the schedule I feel like was a little bit decent to the Rams this year. That start is going to be tough. And there is like another gap or, you know, a little chunk in the schedule that's a little bit tough. But, you know, they're going to be ready to go, I think, at some point. The only thing that could kind of hamper them is, you got a new quarterback, so you got to work out the kinks there. And you look back to last year, like you talked about the Bucs, it took a little while to get going with Tom Brady in that offense. And we're talking about Tom Brady, so... You know, if he takes time to adjust, then it might take a little bit longer, you know, for Stafford, or it might be fair to expect that, you know, first few weeks or, you know, month and a half, maybe 2 months for Sean McVay to really, really get in tempo with his new quarterback, and they can finally work out the kinks and everyone gel and get the chemistry down. But they are going to get a preseason this year, 3 games. The Rams don't usually trot out their starters. Maybe they will a few snaps just because it's new stuff here, but... that's kind of the advantage that they have going into this season as opposed to last season. It's going to be a tough start for sure, but the schedule does lighten up a little bit after there. You look at, you know, the Giants, the Jets, a couple other games like that, Jaguars, where the Rams should be favored and definitely take care of business.
Yeah, and I do feel like this is going to be a year where teams in the past, you know, sit their starters and they barely play a snap in the preseason. I do think they're going to use the preseason a bit, like you said, maybe even for a couple series, the starters are going to go out there like they used to. I don't think we're going to be seeing, you know, starters playing into the second half, you know, that quote unquote dress rehearsal game. I don't think you're going to be seeing that, but I do think that you're going to definitely see the starters, you know, get warmed up at least on the field a bit. Week one is not going to be the first snap that they play in 2021. I can pretty much guarantee that. So after the first 3 games, Chicago, Indy, Tampa, then you're home for the Cardinals. Quick turnaround with a Thursday night game at Seattle. Then, like you mentioned, at the Giants. Home for the Lions, at the Texans. So there's that soft section you were talking about. The Giants, mm-hmm. the Lions, the Texans. I don't even think you can get to 10 wins if you got all those wins up between those three teams. Then back-to-back national TV games before the bye week. Home for Tennessee at San Francisco on Monday night. Tennessee was a Sunday night game. And then the week 11 bye week. So, you know, you get 10 games in before the bye, and like I said, you got some softer games in there. You know, you got some toughness out of the Cardinals, but that's usually a game you guys come away with. You split with Seattle, and that one's on the road at the Giants, home for the Lions, at the Texans, and then the Titans. And who knows what the 49ers are going to be, because they were the, you know, they fell prey to the Super Bowl loser curse last year with the injuries and things like that. But, you know, everyone's expecting them to bounce back this year. So I'm very interested to see how the NFC West is going to turn out, especially with the 49ers supposedly back.
Yeah, and, you know, I tend to agree with most people. I do think the 49ers are going to be back, so to speak. You know, you look back to last year. So many injuries at the quarterback spot, too, the most important position.
Right.
And it was just a disaster for them, that quarterback spot. And they were still, you know, pretty decent. And not only that, but they swept the Rams. They swept the Rams.
Yeah, last I was looking at that, yeah.
No quarterback. So you look at, you know, their team now, I don't know who's going to start there. It's kind of the same situation as you guys. Is mm-hmm. it Jimmy Garoppolo? Is it Trey Lance? And if it is Garoppolo, how long is he going to be in there? But, you know, I'm not ready to count the 49ers out at all. I think they're going to be a lot better this year, a lot more competitive, especially when they turn the page to Trey Lance. I think that Kyle Shanahan can scheme a lot more, you know, crazy things with him back there with that mobility and the rocket of an arm that he has. But I too, you know, I tend to think the Rams are probably the favorite right now. The 49ers maybe creeping up right behind them, not too far behind, and then the Seahawks right behind the 49ers. I think that's kind of the way it looks right now. You know, obviously going to depend on injuries and things like that, but that's kind of the way I see it. And then you got the Cardinals as well, who I don't think are going to be bad either, but Sean McVay's never lost to them. And, you know, I don't know that he will this year. He's done a very good job coaching against those guys. So I think the expectation is that probably split against San Fran, probably split against Seattle, try to, you know, sweep up the Cardinals once again. If you can get out of out of the division at 4-2, I think you're feeling pretty good about your chances there.
Absolutely. And then after the bye, the last seven games at Green Bay, home for Jacksonville, at Arizona on Monday night to close out the series there, home for the Seahawks, at Minnesota, at Baltimore, Christmas Day, or, you know, Christmas, day after Christmas, day after New Year's, and then the last two games, home for San Francisco, home for the Rams. That's not right. Who do you guys play? Is it Seattle again?
San Fran is the last one.
San Fran's the last one?
Yeah.
Oh, you're right. That's okay. Yeah, that's okay. That's me not being a smart guy there. I got week 18 written down there twice, so for some reason, and one was San Francisco, the other one was LA, so I must be there for my San Francisco notes. But yeah, there you go. At Baltimore, and then at the, or home for the 49ers to finish up. So when you look at this, and trying to be critical, but obviously also being biased at the same time, what are you looking at for a win total here?
Yeah, I think it's probably going to come between, you know, maybe 10, 11 wins. I think that's probably fair to expect. You know, they got the extra game now too, so it's kind of weird. I guess 10-7 or 11-6. That's sort of what I'm expecting. But it really just depends on, I guess, how healthy they can be, how quickly Matthew Stafford can get acclimated to this new system, and how he and Sean McVay can, you know, sort of get going. I see it sort of like 10-7 as their floor, if everyone can stay healthy, or, you know, the most important players can stay healthy, and the ceiling being maybe, you know, a 13-4 record if things go very, very well.
Sure.
I tend to think it's probably on that 10-11 range. I think 11 is probably the sweet spot. Maybe 12, you know, if the ball kind of falls their way. But I tend to think 11 or 12 wins, I think that's a fair expectation for a team that, you know, has been very successful. That schedule is relatively tough. But when you look back to the last few years, the Rams have done a lot of traveling, the most of any NFL team. And not only that, but you're talking about consistent trips to, you know, London, and they were going to play in Mexico City, and all these crazy trips. Now it's just like, all right, we're staying in the States, and we're still traveling a decent amount of miles, I think the fourth most in the NFL. But I think they're happy to take that versus, you know, going overseas all the time. It's finally sort of slowing down for them there. But, you know, I think it's going to be a good team, 10, 11 wins probably, maybe 12. So I see it kind of in that range there.
Okay. Well, I do like the team. And, you know, like I said, they're always kind of fascinating to me, those big contract guys that you have, and somehow you're able to put a roster together that produces for you and gets results and things like that. Like I said, that speaks a lot to the scouting and the coaching that they're doing with the players that they're bringing in. And, you know, I'm very interested to see how Stafford does out there in L.A. Like we talked about earlier, this is definitely probably the best team that he's played for thus far, you know, with all the weapons he has around him. He's got a running game behind him, which he has absolutely never had. Like you said, 8 to 10 games in his entire career in Detroit. And I think it does average out to maybe less than one game a season that he's had a 100-yard rusher. And, you know, he's been going to the Pro Bowl, throwing for 4,000 and 5,000 yards consistently. What will he be able to do with a running game, with an offense where you have to respect play action? And things like that, what will he be able to take advantage of that he wasn't able to in Detroit when he was just heaving up prayers to Calvin Johnson over and over again and things like that. So, and then, of course, for the defense to, you know, can they hang on to the number one ranking now that, you know, even though Brandon Staley is gone, Raheem Morris is a smart guy. He's a good coach. Will he be able to maintain the success level that you guys had before? A lot of good things could happen in L.A., and I will start rooting for them again as soon as they change the uniforms back to what they were before.
Oh, that's going to strike a nerve. You know, the fans are so, half of them are very upset. They wanted those old blue and yellow ones and white and yellow ones, and I can't blame them. I think that's the best jersey in sports, but, you know, I just don't think fans look at it like the front office looks at it, because they have the old fans, you know, the older heads and people like me and even older than me. They have them, you know, they have us in their hip pocket. We're not going anywhere. And we like the Rams, whether they were in LA or in St. Louis or in Cleveland, man. It doesn't matter. I think they're trying to identify with this new generation, and they're taking a very, you know, weird turn, straight right, coming off the path there. You don't really expect them to go bone color and this and that. But I like the uniforms. I think the, you know, some combos are maybe not the prettiest, but I think, you know, they did a pretty good job kind of redesigning the team and trying to identify with this new crop of fans and these new generation of kids that, you know, now they're in back in California. So I think they're still trying to get that interest, you know, to where they want it. So it makes sense to me, but I definitely hear your side of the story too. A lot of fans definitely agree with you.
Well, for me, it's not so much about the uniforms. I mean, the only thing that I dislike about the uniforms is that gradient coloring in the numbers on the home jerseys, but it's just like the colors themselves. If they'd have stuck with the old colors with the new design, I think it would look fantastic. I really do. Because that you know, the sharp edge, like, you know, horn logo that they have on the helmet, I don't hate it. You know, I do like it. And I think if they had stuck with the original color palette, that it would look really good. The bone uniform, those have got to go. Those things are awful. But other than that, you know, I do like the uniforms. I like the new look, but I just, the color palette, I would have, it was a, you know, fixing what ain't broke type thing as far as the colors go. Now, just to give you a heads up, I am what you would call a uniform snob. So these kinds of things I'm critical of. Like, we had the Falcons on the schedule last year. So we did spend a good time talking about those uniforms that the Falcons switched to last year and how they were an abomination. And, you know, you're not going to play good because you look terrible. It is just, it's, you know, it's look good, play good, and you guys don't look good. So I don't expect much out of you guys this year. Never mind your roster issues and your salary cap problems. You don't look good, so you're not going to play good. You know, like I said, they're not awful. I didn't dislike like the design and everything like that. It's just the colors were like a shade off from where they should have been. If they'd have just left them the way they were, I'd have been a big fan of the uniforms.
Yeah, and I'm on the complete opposite end of the spectrum. I'm like, I don't give a damn about what you're wearing. Put whatever you want on. Put tutus on, man. I don't care. Just go play football games. Go hit somebody. Like that old traditionalist mentality. Just go win football games. That's all that matters to me.
Right. Well, I'm also a fan of a team that hasn't changed its uniform like ever. So
I like that.
You know, absolutely. I still think our road uniforms, the white tops and the dark bottoms, that's the sexiest uniform in sports, in my opinion. So, you know, that's just how I roll. So, but it's like I'm a graphic designer by trade, and so I look and I notice things like that. And when the Rams uniforms came out, it was like, I like the uniforms. They should have stuck with the old colors. That would have worked a whole lot better for me personally. But anyway, Sosa, thanks so much for coming in. It's always nice to make a new friend, and we look forward to having you back to kick off the season. Week one, we'll be talking about the preseason, who made the roster, who didn't, and what we're looking forward to in the first Sunday night matchup of the year.
Absolutely, my man. Thank you for having me. Week one should be fun. Can't wait to get back to actual football. It's going to be fun to break that down. And best of luck to both teams. You know, I think both teams should be very successful this season.
And where can we find you online if we're looking for you?
Yeah, you can find my work over at PFF or at Locked On Rams. I'm the host there. And you can find me on Twitter at QBsMVP.
And there you have it, Sosa K. Thanks so much for being on the show. We'll talk to you again soon, man.
Absolutely, man. Cheers.
As always, want to thank my guest, Sosa K, from the Locked On Rams podcast for joining us. Looking forward to talking to him, well, sooner than everybody else. We start off week one with the Rams on Sunday Night Football, and very intrigued to see where the Bears will be at that point. Will we be, you know, clamoring for Justin Fields to be the starting quarterback? Will it be Andy Dalton? Will he put our, you know, fears to ease with a good preseason performance and things like that? I'm sure that no matter what happens in the preseason, we'll all be excited about the prospect of Justin Fields taking the field at one point. But I think it would help me breathe a lot easier if Andy Dalton came in and performed well. So at the very least, God forbid, if he's asked, got to be our backup at some point, we'll know that we'll be able to still win football games, even though he's not our starter. So I'm interested to see, especially with Nagy. Sometimes, you know, he's talking out both sides of his mouth, where Andy Dalton is our day one starter. Don't look for Justin Fields to be the week one starter. And then at the same time saying things like, you never know what happens, but we're going to stick to the plan. We're going to stick to the plan, and, you know, and all that kind of stuff. So
we'll see. He's kind of bouncing back and forth on where he lands on that kind of thing. And I'm interested to see where the Bears are going to land on it. You know, and like I said, after talking to everybody, it's like, wait till you hear my conversation with our Seahawks guest on Thursday, Michael Sean Duggar. I screw up his name all the time. But anyway, Michael will be on the show on Thursday. By the end of our talk with him, I'm like, yeah, screw Andy Dalton. Let's play Justin Fields right away. To hell with this. Nobody wants to wait. Let's put him on the field now. Wait till you hear the argument that he makes that sways me completely to the Justin Fields playing immediately side of things. So, yeah, I was hard pressed. Like, nope, Andy Dalton, I don't care if we see Justin Fields at all. I'm going with the Pat Mahomes idea. And then I talked to Mike Sean, and he's like, yeah, here's why he should play, and it's a brilliant argument. So wait till you hear that one on Thursday. But, you know, again, want to thank Sosa K. I'm very interested to see how the Rams are going to do past week one with Matt Stafford, with him being surrounded by the most complete roster he's ever been a part of. He'll have a solid running game, one of the best defenses in the NFL, and all the weapons you can shake a stick at out there in L.A. and see if they can pull this thing off. So, you know, the Rams are, you know, if I had to choose today, they'd be a heavy favorite of mine in the NFC to represent in the Super Bowl. I mean, I just think they're an outstanding football team. Now it's up to them to take the field and make it real. So anyway, like I said, Thursday, Michael Sean Duggar from The Athletic in Seattle will be our guest to close up the NFC West. And then we'll be moving on to the AFC North with the Bengals, the Browns, the Ravens, and the Steelers before we shut everything down with our NFC North brethren. And then finally, our beloved Chicago Bears. We are getting so close, guys. We are getting closer and closer all the time. When this episode drops, it'll be June 21st. So we're almost through the month of June. By the time we get done with the previews, it'll be, you know, July. We'll be on the heels of the preseason and training camp. And shortly after that, the regular season will be here. And then all will be right with the world again. So come back on Thursday, where we'll preview the Seattle Seahawks. And until then, my name is Larry D. And this has been the Bears Talk Underground.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crow portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/Wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/Wondery.